This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. In May 2016, a jury found that a coal company owned by then-candidate for governor Jim Justice wasn't responsible for contaminating the water wells of several Wyoming County residents. Still, an order requiring the firm to provide temporary fresh water stayed in place, and the water kept coming until recently when it abruptly stopped. Molly Bourne has the story.
We're going to where I pump water out of the creek.
Jason Walker and his mother are next door neighbors here in Cedar Creek. They and more than 30 other families maintain that Dynamic Energy's nearby surface mining operation contaminated their water. The families recently appealed to the state's highest court and hope to get another shot at pleading their case. But they're worried about something more urgent at the moment.
You're looking down over the creek bank into the actual creek, the deepest part that's here in front of my house, and I have a submergible pump down in the creek with a fire hose attached to it run through the yard to the tank.
Each of the initial 16 families that sued have received 10 5-gallon jugs of water per month since December 2014, paid for by the coal company. 10 more families signed on and began getting water too in 2016. Then about a week before this past Christmas, Jason Walker says, the guy who hauls it to them stopped coming. Now he has to dip into the nearby creek, and he treats the water with pool chemicals to flush the toilets. He fills used water containers at the auto parts store where he works and hauls them home.
We do have water. It's just we can't use it like you would normally do on a normal daily basis. If I'm working here at home, say changing my own oil, I get dirty. I have to go 10 miles to take a bath.
In the kitchen of Jason Walker's small but tidy home, an office-like water cooler is a permanent fixture. Early on, the coal company paid for that and replaced the tanks outside, and when the water was coming, he says things were good. His family has had water issues in the past, but they'd always been manageable. Then about 4 or 5 years ago, around the time he says the coal company started blasting, he could no longer treat the water with his usual methods, like a salt filter. It's a hassle now to think about drawing from a well again, he says, but it's harrowing too.
It's such a scary thought that something that comes out of your ground can kill you.
Testing presented by the residents' attorneys at trial showed the water had high levels of arsenic, lead, and other pollutants. But scientists from the State Department of Environmental Protection found no correlation between the mine and the wells in question. Still, there are laws requiring mine companies that contaminate a resident's water supply to provide temporary water and work toward a long-term solution. And a judge issued an order reinforcing those laws in this case. Billy Shelton, an attorney for Dynamic Energy and its parent company, Meshel Bluestone, both owned by the governor, said he couldn't comment on a pending lawsuit. But here's what he told the state Supreme Court last month.
I'm sure all of you had clients you could not control. I've told them, I've written them, I've sent emails, I've called them on the phone and said, in my opinion, you need to comply with the order until we receive an order dissolving that order.
Shelton says the company spent $1 million providing water until January, when it stopped.
The word I get is the company can no longer afford to pay that. They gave the guy in the check bounce.
He's talking about the water delivery man. We couldn't reach him for this story. Governor Jim Justice, a billionaire who also owns the luxury Greenbrier Resort, has failed for years to pay off various debts associated with his companies. He didn't respond to requests for comment through representatives.
Hi, how are you?
Unlike their neighbors, Debbie Browning and her husband Emmett have taken a chance on their old well when the water from the company stopped coming. They spent about a week with no water and had to get someone to come fix the well before they could use it again. Now they're bathing and washing clothes with the water, despite the risks.
Having it just cut off with no warning, you know, not letting us be prepared, that was not right. I'm just thankful that I was able to use my water, you know, even if it was iron and rust and all those brown stuff, you know, it's in it. So, but I'm just thankful that I was able to have, you know, fortunate enough to turn it back on.
Both she and Jason Walker voted for Governor Justice, and they say they're able to make a distinction between the public official and the mine company owner.
As a governor, I think he's doing a good job. You know, I like him. I like him as myself. I voted for the man. So, you know, I'd appreciate it if he'd just take care of our water situation, you know. That'd be nice.
And like many in the area, both families have connections to the mining industry.
None of us on this lawsuit is against the coal mining company. I mean, that's a way of life here in West Virginia. Only thing we have a problem with is they're damaging our resources to our natural water, and we want them to clean the mess up.
Another aspect of this case that makes it stand apart from other water problems in the region is the court order to deliver the water. Warren McGraw, the circuit judge in Wyoming County, kept it in place even after the trial ended. The move baffled Billy Shelton, the coal company's attorney.
Your Honor, that I couldn't believe that we, after prevailing at trial, still couldn't get the injunction lifted.
It's the judge's decision on the injunction, and the judge made the decision based on the evidence.
Kevin Thompson, an attorney for the families.
He kept it in place because he knows that those people need water, plain and simple.
Back in Cedar Creek, Jason Walker washes his hands in a pink tub full of soapy water sitting in the sink. In a few weeks, he plans to drill a new well, hoping to find a new seam of water. His current well is full of sediment, and he has to replace the filter system that's gone bad from being idle. But he says there's still a risk.
Clear water might be contaminated. You just never know what you're going to drink.
Attorneys for Dynamic told the state Supreme Court Monday that it couldn't afford to continue providing the water, and that it shouldn't have to, based on the 2016 trial outcome. The court is expected to respond this week and decide on the appeal sometime this spring. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Molly Bourne in Cedar Creek, Wyoming County.
There's a national storyline that's told about parts of West Virginia and Pennsylvania. It goes like this. As the steel and coal industries fade, small towns here literally are dying out. But for the past 20 years, some entrepreneurs have quietly been working on a different narrative, one that leverages the region's natural beauty to build the economy. As part of our Appalachian Innovators series, the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports that there's a slow climb is starting to bear real fruit.
About 10 years ago, after a long career in computer sales, Rod Darby was downsized and out of work.
And I got angry about that, so I thought I'm never going to work for somebody else again, so I'm going to go start my own business.
As he researched what that business would be, he started noticing a lot of activity around the Great Allegheny Passage, a 150-mile bike trail along an old rail line connecting Pittsburgh to Cumberland, Maryland, and Washington, D.C. Construction was still in progress then, but it's since been completed. Darby wrote up a business plan to open a bar and restaurant along the trail in West Newton, a small town about 30 miles south of Pittsburgh. He shopped the idea around.
I went to a large bank. They said, nope, that's not what we do. Went to a medium-sized bank. Hey, great plan. That's not what we do. Went to a small bank. Great plan. We're not sure about this trail.
Then he went to a community development program called the Progress Fund.
And they said, this is exactly what we do. And they've been a fantastic partner for me since we started.
David Cayley, co-founder of the Progress Fund, saw a need to support tourism in the region 20 years ago.
So we started basically a nonprofit bank and started making loans to small businesses.
They initially invested in nearby Ohio Pile, financing a whitewater rafting facility, a bed and breakfast, and other tourism projects. Today it's bustling with cyclists, hikers, and rafters spending money to eat, shop, and stay overnight. Cayley wanted to try something similar in West Newton, which is only a 34-mile bike ride from Pittsburgh. Then Rod Darby walked in the door.
Rod became one of the first people outside of Ohio Pile to start investing in the other little towns. So when he approached and said, I want to do something here, we were jumping for joy.
Today, Darby's Trailside Restaurant serves pub food, boasts a full bar and a takeout beer shop.
Any particular flavor, Dave?
28 people work here, 16 of them full-time. And Darby says business is hopping.
People ask me all the time, does that trail help you out? And I said, the trail's the reason I'm here.
The Progress Fund's David Cayley walks just a few feet from the restaurant onto that bike trail that runs along the river.
We have all these nifty signs so you don't get lost.
The fund invested in pizza and fast food restaurants here, a canoe and kayak livery, and the renovation of a bed and breakfast, totaling nearly $2.5 million.
Well, we have 9 loans that we've done in West Newton. And it's really that kind of level of investments changing West Newton's future around tourism. Why nine loans here? Well, that Great Allegheny Passage is a huge economic opportunity.
Based on studies and surveys over 17 years, the Progress Fund estimates nearly 1 million people use the Gap Trail annually, creating an economic benefit of $50 million along the route. 65 trail-related businesses have opened in the past decade. As the steel and coal industries have declined, Kaley says West Newton and other towns in the region have faced years of disinvestment. But he says the Progress Fund is trying to help them see what they do have to offer.
The resource here is the landscape and all the recreational opportunities. So it is a fully invested economic development program, but it's one that relies on the environmental aspects or environmental qualities of the community rather than being the extractive industry.
Kent Spellman is encouraged by the results of the Progress Fund. He's pushing for this kind of development along West Virginia's abandoned train tracks, too.
I'm a consultant with the Rails to Trails Conservancy out of Washington, D.C.
Spellman has spent most of his life in West Virginia. He says some communities are suffering from something like post-traumatic stress disorder because of the loss of industry in recent decades.
Their future, too often, in southern West Virginia, but also in many northern West Virginia communities, has been determined by that big extractive industry, or that big steel mill, or that big chemical company. Those things are going away, and it's, I think, a time for us in rural Appalachia to start understanding that we have to take responsibility for our future ourselves.
Spellman is currently focused on completing a 230-mile rail trail from Parkersburg to Morgantown, hooking up with the Great Allegheny Passage into Pittsburgh. He sees rail trails as the new Main Street, the place where people walk their dogs and talk with neighbors, and a piece of the region's future economy. Christine Risch isn't quite convinced.
Well, it may never replace to the level what was lost by the coal industry.
Risch is director of resource and energy economics at Marshall University Center for Business Economics in Huntington.
Because those jobs were extremely good-paying jobs, tourism industry does not pay as good of wages. You know, they're lower wage, closer to minimum wage.
But Risch also sees reason for hope in the tourism industry. She points to the Hatfield-McCoy Trail system in southwestern West Virginia, an area she says has lost more coal jobs than most of the state. While Rails to Trails are for bicycles, the Hatfield-McCoy Trails are for motorized all-terrain vehicles. Her center surveyed visitors there in 2014.
We estimated, based on surveys, that about $22 million was staying in the area for what people were spending to buy permits to ride the trails, for lodging and food and fuel that they needed while they're in the area.
According to the Marshall study, the Hatfield-McCoy Trail system was supporting nearly 240 jobs in 2014. Risch says the number of permits sold has continued to grow since then, as has the need for lodging and other amenities to support those visitors.
It's not replacing the coal industry yet, but it certainly has potential to grow quite a lot.
Ken Spellman says trail tourism could bring a longer-term economic boost to the region because it can showcase the beauty and livability of West Virginia.
And if we get just a small percentage of the people who come through our communities to be thinking down the road about maybe that would be a good place to rear a family, maybe that would be a good place to bring my small business, that is the goal of tourism.
Mary Popovich agrees. She's the mayor of West Newton, Pennsylvania, and today she sits at a beautifully renovated downtown building looking out onto the Youghiogheny River. She says thanks to the trail and the economic development around it, there's excitement in her old coal town. Even the elementary school that almost closed is now seeing increased enrollment.
There's a lot of houses that are getting sold to young families. This is how you help your community grow in numbers, and then you're going to get more businesses.
The Progress Fund has invested a lot in West Newton, hoping other former coal towns will look here and start reimagining their futures as trail towns. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Julie Grant.
The Appalachian Innovator Series is made possible with support from the Benedim Foundation and the Appalachian Regional Commission. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.